You're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Wednesday, September 21st. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis, and you're the birthday boy.
Hey, buddy. Big birthday for me.
I know. What a celebration it's been.
No one celebrates birthdays quite like I do, I don't think.
That's probably true. Getting scolded for walking around barefoot in a hotel.
I did get yelled at by a hotel employee.
Losing track of someone else's kids. It's been a good one. It's been a good one so far.
I was told by a hotel employee that it was not appreciated and that if guests could just please wear their shoes in the lobby. What they didn't apologize for was their Wi-Fi hasn't worked for the last 10 hours, and guys like us just simply can't survive without it.
No one
cares about this. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is our site, DFSR.com for short. Head over. You can still grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you one-button calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and that includes access to our Player Lab as well as MLB projections. Still got a little bit of regular season MLB be going, so it's all under one umbrella. You are good to go. All right, bud. Late last night, published our week three picks for this week. Those are up live on the site at the top of the page if you're more of a reader than a listener. Though if you're listening, you're probably here for a reason. You're more of an audio learner. So,
or maybe you like both, because we'll have some nuggets here that aren't in the articles. So
we're going to go through today. We're going to go through our just sort of our value picks in different price tiers. And then on Friday, for Friday morning, we will have up the our game-by-game breakdown, where we'll just go through every single game and talk about highlighting the values that we think are there, maybe some things you can avoid.
Touch on some injury news, some updates, 100%. Make sure you're totally caught up going into the week.
So let's actually hammer away some injury news first now, because I think that's a little bit more timely than some of the picks that we put up, which will always be there.
Timeless, evergreen picks.
The first piece of news today is Dante Moncrief is going to be out with a scapula fracture. I think that's
easy for you to say.
I was like, it sounded so bad. It sounded like maybe part of your scalp. I'm not exactly sure.
Scapula? It's your shoulder blade.
Oh, it's your shoulder blade? Yeah, see, I'm not a doctor, dude. I'm not a doctor. I can't like look up all these body parts are. His scapula is hurt. I thought scalp, but it's not a scalp. It's a scapula. He's out. That's kind of big news, I think, for the Colts. Where did your first thoughts when you saw that he's just not going to play?
Well, given that T.Y. Hilton is already in the top two in the league in targets, it seems to me that won't go down with Moncrief out. I mean, a lot of people pictured Moncrief as sort of a breakout guy this season, especially taking over more in the possession game for Luck. With Moncrief out, that certainly does open up quite a bit of targets. We kind of like Philip Dorsett. It's probably more of an offbeat play. I doubt you'll want to roll him out in your cash games unless you just want a really cheap punt. But T.Y. Hilton, he's in the mid-7,000s on FanDuel, so it's not like you're crushing a sig value play or anything like that, but he was already sort of a consideration given the huge volume of targets. One thing to keep in mind with Hilton, though, he's never been a high conversion guy, so when we talk about conversion, we're talking about converting targets into receptions. So, you know, if it is a game where the Colts value being more in possession and not going downfield, you could see a scenario where he doesn't disappear completely but doesn't maybe put up the numbers you're hoping for. But yeah, still a guy I'll be very comfortable playing basically in any format.
Outside of him, the Colts have really spread the ball around a lot this year. They haven't really dialed it into one, you know, sort of secondary option. They've given Allen some looks. They gave Doyle some looks. Dorsett's around there. They've thrown to the running back position quite a bunch. So it's not exactly like... To me, I suppose Dorsett is definitely the next guy up, especially if he's just going to be out there for the wide receiver two snaps. But you can see this sort of getting spread around just a little bit more. But that still is, you know, 5 to 6 targets a game that we're going that way. So there's some, I think there's, you know, you could see a guy break out for the Colts this week. After him, the other big piece of news, I mean, this is probably arguably bigger, and I probably should have led with this, is Peterson is going to be out for, I think, 3 to 4 months. So that's pretty much the end of his season, I would say. And probably at the end of his career as a Viking, I would suspect it's the end of his contract. But where do you... is this one of these situations where it's like, maybe Asiata, maybe McKinnon, avoid both, play one or the other? What do you think?
No, I think I like Jerick McKinnon. You know, we've seen actually this exact situation play out in the past where the Vikings could choose between these two specific backs. And in the past, they favored McKinnon in the feature back role. Asiata is really just... not a feature back in any definition of the word. He's just kind of a bruising goal line guy, a short possession guy. Now, this was 2 years ago, so it's hard to say. I mean, Peterson was an iron workhorse last season, if that's a saying, not sure. But, you know, when McKinnon was in there, we did see him go in the high teens on touches. And yeah, he did lack the goal line work, but did have some explosive performances. So it wouldn't shock me at all to see him be a good value for week two. Although, yeah, it's almost a sure thing that he won't be the goal line back. So definitely temper your enthusiasm on that one and be concerned that the upside will be severely limited by the lack of goal line work.
To me, I'm pretty much avoiding it, I think.
Even at 5,300 on FanDuel, though, I mean, that's a sick price.
It is. I think there's other just definitive, just even upper tier guys that you can pay for that you just know are going to get the touches this week. I think I'd be happy to just pay for up for them. I mean, this is also Wednesday morning. There could be news that, like, you know, McKinnon took 90% of the first team reps or something like that in practice, and they were really committed to him. I don't know. It just doesn't really...
Zimmer came out and said that he's confirming that McKinnon's the starting running back.
Yeah, I'm still... I don't know.
Doug is lukewarm. I am Luke Hott.
Luke Hott. The other piece of information, another one, was Jonathan Stewart is definitely not going to play this week. They, I'm pretty sure, have come out and said they're straight up going goal running back by committee with that one between Foswit Whitaker, don't call him Fozzie, and Cameron Artis Payne. If a team just comes out and says we're just going to committee this bad boy, then does that just mean just no thanks?
Yeah, and I wrote about this in the Picks article as well, but Whitaker is already kind of expensive. He was already, I think, 3,300 or something on. Yeah, 6,300, I'm sorry, on FanDuel. So playing a guy at 6,300, you can just get guys that are locked in the starting role. He's not a guy that's on my radar whatsoever.
And we mentioned this the last podcast, but some of these prices on these backup running backs just aren't punt plays. It seems like the sites
6,300, not a punt. Jerick McKinnon at 53 is a punt.
They purposely not placed these, just knowing now that running backs are going to get hurt and these guys are just going to creep to the top sometime during the week. None of them are priced as punt plays. The days of grabbing a backup running back that's now the starter and getting some crazy value on him may just be over in daily fantasy. Sites seem to be pretty in tune to this, and we are just not really able to take advantage.
Yeah, they'll fall asleep at the wheel as the season goes along would be my guess, but yeah, certainly early on, I think, yeah, they're trying to protect those newish players who have never heard of Fozzie Whitaker from just getting railroaded. So yeah, Fozzie Whitaker at 6,300, not even on my short list.
Another one that just came across the wire, it doesn't look like Arian Foster is going to play, just to continue that sort of running back injury.
Quagmire.
Yeah. Right. Looking at RotoWorld right now, it's saying that he's a long shot to play. That probably means he's not going to go against the Browns this week. That would leave I think that's his name. You know, it's crazy. I've seen his name like 1,000 times, especially dating back to like college football. And I'm Jay Ajayi. I can't remember exactly how to pronounce his name, but he would probably step in as a starter. He's really just not that good. So I'm not sure. Even with a healthy dose of carries, I'm not sure how excited I can get.
Well,
for
even
that.
Him and Kenny and Drake, like Ajayi is 5,700 and Drake is 5,900. So this is once again, like, if you're going to consider guys in that territory, just play Jerick McKinnon. Like, there's no reason. Like, look at what the Dolphins did last week with the carries. No one got over 7 carries or something. It's a complete mess. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Also, the Redskins come out and say they're going to flip the script a little bit with what they did from week one against the Steelers. Now they're going to have Josh Norman just cover Odell Beckham the entire game. Does this change our projection on Beckham at all? We weren't so crazy high on him to begin with. But do you think that we now, because we had fiddled a little bit with the defense versus wide receiver one numbers that we had on Washington going into this year, knowing that Norman would definitely impact their, you know, just make them better. But then we actually went the other way when we knew he wasn't going to shadow Brown, because we just then couldn't be confident that he was going to bring that elite talent level to the wide receiver one the whole game. Do we think we go back the other way and readjust those Redskin numbers?
Yeah, I think so. I think also with Beckham, I mean, regardless of whether Norman shadows him or not throughout the course of the game, he's just been a slight cut below the top-level wide receivers. I mean, both in terms of targets, receptions, yards, touchdowns, everything. So, like, last game in a phenomenal matchup with New Orleans, just the 8 receptions for 86 yards, only got 14.1% of his team targets, and that was in a situation totally unlike being shadowed by Josh Norman. They also hate each other, so I suspect that Josh Norman is going to just be going all out and trying to antagonize him and be in his head and chase him around. So I wouldn't be surprised if Beckham turns in sort of a dud, and I doubt people will choose him as their wide receiver one of the day.
We mentioned last podcast, too. It's so funny with the way NFL works because Beckham did have like a 40-yard touchdown pass that he just dropped where he was sort of just open. And all of a sudden, if he catches that, it's like 9 for 120 and a touchdown. And we might have a sort of different feeling about it. I'm not positive, but you can't really, if you're going to do that for Beckham, you have to do that for every single guy in the whole NFL and just look at the plays on each one. So that one's stuck in my head, but it's just one of those things where a simple play that a ball that he probably catches, 80 times out of 100, 85 times out of 100 more, and he just drops it. And now the line looks a little different.
Yeah, for sure it does. I mean, the problem with Beckham is you can even give him an extra target in reception, and he's still under 10 targets. He's still at just 12 total targets for the season, and that's just not what you want on your wide receiver one, generally speaking. Now, there could be something going on that we don't know about that's going to have Beckham slide more into that more traditional wide receiver one role again. I think for now, it's pretty reasonable after a two-game sample in which he had great matchups in close games where the Giants wanted to be scoring and wanted to be moving the ball, that you can take at least a step back and raise your eyebrow a bit and say, I'm not exactly sure what this situation is. Because especially Sterling Shepard, I mean, one of the things about the Giants in the recent past is that they really haven't had another guy to draw Eli's eye away. Like, it was kind of Beckham or bust. And with Shepard there now, who's looking like an elite wide receiver talent, we might be seeing, more parity among their wide receiver targets.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that in the past it was Reuben Randall who sucked. And now it's Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz. And so when you have those two guys, it might not be a Beckham thing. It might just be the team, the overall talent around him has improved. Right. And therefore, you no longer need to force feed him the ball.
Exactly. And again, we talked about this last podcast, but there's only so many guys that are going to get 190 targets a season or whatever. Most teams don't have that guy, probably for good reason, because it's kind of predictable when you feed the same guy the ball every single week. So I'm personally at least going to, in somewhat of a wait-and-see approach on Beckham.
And finally, just a little bit of quarterback carousel going on. Cutler, it doesn't look like he's going to play. Brian Hoyer is going to get the start for the Bears. McCown is probably not playing. Cody Kessler going to get the start for the Browns. It looks like Jimmy Garoppolo probably not going to play. Jacoby Brissett is going to get them. And I saw a note that they're already training Julian Edelman to be the backup quarterback for this week. So the Patriots are a real mess. Any of these are even remotely interesting? I probably even missed a guy, but any of these guys even remotely interest you on the quarterback front, or is just kind of, these are so far, Cody Kessler's the third Brown quarterback in 3 weeks, so.
Yeah, I mean, none of those situations frankly interest me very much. I will say that there are ramifications that kind of go downwind for some of those. Like, I'm looking at Alshon Jeffery in particular. He had a pretty reassuring performance in week 2. Now he's actually averaging better than 100 receiving yards a game for the system, and a guy that is creeping up on people's radars. Again, 7,900, it's not the safest situation as it was, but he, in my mind, was looking like a really interesting big tournament play where you can get some solid separation, and now probably just not interesting. That's a lot to invest in a guy with a totally unknown quarterback. So, yeah, unfortunately, I think this probably just crosses off a lot of these teams and makes them, almost stay ways across the board.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, every year there's injuries, so I don't want to be like, that's crazy with the injuries this year, because NFL is just, the sport is made. made to have guys injured, but yeah. We are dealing with a lot of different stuff. But it's mostly funny because a lot of the different injury news doesn't really open anything else up, except for the safety in the guys that are in situations that remain the same. That's actually the thing that is probably the most telling about this week, is that guys whose team situations haven't changed at all, those are the ones we really want to gravitate to in cash games, so we can talk about some of the value plays we wrote up. Before we do, James, hit us with a sponsor real quick.
Yeah, so let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a new-to-the-scene DFS site where you can go and play daily fantasy sports contests just like you picture, salary cap games, head-to-head contests, and so on. Fantasy Factor does a few things that are a little bit different than the rest of the industry, which we really appreciate. So the first thing is the way they handle their bonuses. When you sign up at Fantasy Factor with a $10 deposit, you can get a $5 bonus that you can use just hands-free, use it for whatever you want. You can use it right away. It doesn't have to drip out over time. So you can enter a contest with it and see how you do. If you win, you keep the money. If you lose, it's on them. So I find that to be pretty neat. And the other one is that it's just not shark-infested waters over there. Experts aren't jamming in 50 entries in a tournament or cramming up all the big overlay on the big tournaments there. It's mostly smaller-time players playing, smaller contests against other guys who do the same thing. So you go over there, use promo code DFSR, get you started up with that $5 bonus. And again, that's fantasyfactor.com. And yeah, they'll take care of you. Say hi for us. There we go.
All right, let's start with the quarterbacks we have this week. we kind of trended our picks more in the middle, in the sort of the middle tier of throwers this week for a couple different reasons that we'll maybe get to at the other positions, because I think for us, for cash games, I mean, I mentioned it a couple seconds ago, but there are some guys that you can clearly just pay up for with safety this week, mm-hmm. that you don't need to, but it really is going to be hard to get away from some of these plays. So some of our quarterback plays land squarely in the middle tier. First one we had was Kirk Cousins on there. Cousins is a guy who it seemed like the team was like sort of turning against him, and I know you had a funny reaction about that in terms of, you know, the team's turning against them. Like, what are they talking about here? Tell me about your reaction about when you heard there was maybe some negative feelings about Cousins, like coming out of the Redskins.
Sure. So we were breaking down, you know, the plays of the week and kind of getting the system under control, and Cousins was coming up in the optimal lineups based on the numbers. And so we just go and do a sanity check on RotoWorld, because again, he's really cheap, 7,200 on FanDuel. And the only note there was saying how there's like a visible disturbance in the locker room and how people are starting to complain about his performance. And then you go and look at the numbers, and the poor guy, like, so he's third in the NFL in total passing yards, seems solid enough. He is 11th in the NFL in completion percentage, so he's ranking in the top third of the league. He's, you know, yeah, sure, he's only gotten one touchdown and has three interceptions, but past completion percentage is a better predictor of future interceptions than interceptions. So this strikes me as a case where probably one guy said one thing, and it's one of those situations, like a gossipy college situation where someone's like, hey, did you hear what this guy said about this other guy? I suspect that Cousins will turn around. He's also got some tools and weapons. I mean, DeSean Jackson is still a very relevant downfield option. Pierre Garçon can still be solid in the possession game. And even Jamison Crowder, he's looking at a lot more, to say nothing of Jordan Reed, right? I mean, one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the league. So really, really nice situation against the Giants this week. Huge buy-low opportunity. I do think a lot of people are going to go the other way this game and give Eli another chance against Cousins, which, by the way, I think is a absolutely fine play as well. But given the lack of confidence they seem to have in Matt Jones so far, I wouldn't be surprised to see Cousins go out there and be one of the top five or so overall points guys for the week.
Yeah, I love him. I don't think many people will be on him this week. He doesn't strike me as sort of a narrative guy coming in.
Doesn't seem like it, yeah.
Giants are below average so far this year against the pass and DVOA. I know it's only two games. It's a little hard to judge exactly how, you know, how relevant those numbers are, though some of these DVOA numbers do line up just in general with how you feel about certain teams. The teams that we expected to be pretty bad against the pass continue to be, so some of these things will start to even out. We usually like to wait 3 or 4 weeks before we start incorporating this year's stats even really at all with any sort of metrics.
Yeah, making some anecdotal changes based on, you know, Josh Norman switching teams or big injuries or whatever, but yeah, by and large, teams, a better predictor of week 3 performance is 2015 performance than week 2 2016 performance.
The other guy we had on there, we had a couple, but next guy up was Matt Ryan. Ryan goes in, is going to face the Saints. Speaking of teams that continue to be sort of bad against the pass, the Saints are firmly in that camp. Not many improvements so far. Give me the reasoning why we have Ryan on there, who I suspect might be a chalkier play, all things considered, but do you think it ends up being correct on him?
I do. I mean, yeah, for people who are playing contests that include the Monday night game, I suspect Ryan will be very, very highly owned. He's a second in the league in total passing yards, but the thing he has going for him is that he hasn't lined up the poor touchdown-interception ratio. He's actually got 5 touchdowns to 1 interception, spreading the ball around a ton, not relying on Julio as much as he has in the past, and I think that's actually done a lot for his completion percentage. His 72.6% is extremely high. There's very, very few quarterbacks in that same stratosphere, so I really, really like him for this week. But again, you're not going to really be getting too much separation from the field. It is interesting to note, though, because he's a guy a lot of people are soured on based on past performance, so I would suspect, like, at least casual fans might not be as aware of Ryan as you might be, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him priced among the top guys in the league as the season continues.
They're a slight underdog on Monday against New Orleans, -3. That's probably just mostly the home bump that the Saints are getting there. It's pretty much by far the highest implied total of the week. I mean, there was one more game at 52 and then nothing else above 50 for this week, and they're at and the Saints and Falcons are at 54. That will be a highly targeted. Like you said, it doesn't help us so much because a lot of those main slates just cover Sunday's games, so we will have to wait for, you know, maybe some 4 o'clock-ish or on late Sunday, Monday slates to get take advantage of Ryan there. You know, another guy we put on there that doesn't fit the cheaper mold as much as the first two guys, I mean, Ryan's not cheap, don't get me wrong, he's 8,500, is Cam. Cam's coming off a week where he was by far the best quarterback of week 2, where he is now with a running back by committee situation, and he definitely got out of the pocket a little bit more last week and ran, mm-hmm. which is going to keep his floor pretty high. He has that wide receiver one target in Kelvin Benjamin now. Do you think we can get out of the cheaper zone on guys like, you know, we mentioned Cousins at the top. Tannehill's a cheaper guy who might mm-hmm. be in a decent spot this week. We didn't write him up. And we have one other cheap guy after this. But do you see us maybe possibly even paying up for a guy like Cam this week?
I think it's possible. It's going to kind of depend on where the value comes up elsewhere. Mostly because Cousins, to a lesser extent, Manning. And, you know, Ryan, he's more expensive on FanDuel, but not as bad on DraftKings. These guys are allowing you to pay up elsewhere where safety might be more at a premium. So, yeah, I mean, I don't personally mind paying up for Cam at all. I mean, especially in big tournaments, although probably he'll be over-owned there based on being the tournament-winning quarterback from last week. But you mentioned Benjamin. He loved throwing to Benjamin 2 years ago. Benjamin's a legit wide receiver one type talent who can go downfield, catch balls in traffic, in double teams, and so on. And his mere existence really opens up a lot of the underneath stuff that the Panthers like to do, throw to running backs out of the backfield or pass to Greg Olsen, or just open Cam up to scramble for a few yards. I do really like Cam quite a lot this week. I could see him having a great week against Minnesota. One thing that's kind of tempering my enthusiasm is that Minnesota's defense has actually looked pretty sharp in the first 2 weeks of the season. They shut down Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers on Monday night last week, so I won't be surprised if this is where I want to spend up at the end of the week, but I don't blame anyone who does.
And the last guy we had in there, and this is more of a DraftKings play for, I think, for us, because he's significantly cheaper than the guys we mentioned above, is Marcus Mariota. Mm-hmm. He faces Oakland. Oakland, through the first 2 weeks of the season, has been the dead last team in the league against the pass, so which, again, carries over some from last year. He's a guy coming very cheap, 5,900. He has not run as much as I expected him to, just based on his sort of like makeup out of the first year and coming out of college, the way he played. The rushing attempts haven't been there as much, but for 5,900 on DraftKings, you know, we talked about it. I love this as a especially because DraftKings, the prices are spread out a little bit more, and you mm-hmm. do need to pay even more part of your cap towards some of those elite plays. Getting Mariota at 5,900, I'm kind of in love with it. I don't know if you're on the same page. He was one of the guys I wrote up.
Yeah, I don't mind Mariota. I think that, for me, it's more of a punt-style play. Oakland has had a rough time against passers, but they've also faced the Saints and the Falcons so far, so I think it's some of that is probably matchup dependent, although Oakland had a pretty bad track record last year too, so that could just be a where there's smoke, there's fire situation. I don't mind Mariota whatsoever. I mean, especially in a big tournament, if you're going to pair him with Tajay Sharpe and maybe even Delanie Walker, yeah, I'm listening. I don't think it's definitely not out of bounds. It's going to be a little bit tougher for me, given that you're not having to pay too much more for a guy like Cousins, who I perceive to be quite a bit safer. It's a little tough to picture going that far on Mariota when Cousins is just 500 more. But yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable.
Flacco falls into that same sort of price tier, and he's mostly there because he's facing Jacksonville, who has some of their own definite issues facing the pass. There are a bunch of mediocre-ish quarterbacks facing really bad defenses this week, and that seems to me might possibly where I go, even maybe mixing and matching some of these guys, because they're all sort of in the same price tier. They all have great matchups, and we're probably talking about decimal points at that point, really, in terms of overall expectation, sort of around the same price tier.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's, you know, a lot of times when we're breaking down our plays and the types of guys that are coming up in optimal lineups, I think we like to point out that in many cases, what we're really saying here is it doesn't seem like a week to pay up at quarterback, right? Like, you know, there's good value in the middle tier and the lower tier at quarterback, and good value in some of the upper tiers and other positions. So if you're going to spend up and go grab a guy like Cam, then be prepared to speculate at positions where you probably don't need to.
Yeah, and one of those positions we really don't, I personally do not want to speculate at all on, is mm-hmm. running back, because we've seen, and we mentioned on a previous podcast, and I don't remember exactly which one, but the disparity between the haves in terms of carries and the have-nots, and there are really only four or five haves, and mm-hmm. then there is a really steep drop-off to teams that just aren't playing the same style of just running their yep. their running backs into the ground. The guys that we have here that fall into this category, D'Angelo Williams is the first one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've played DFS for the first 2 weeks, or you've had in your home league, even if you're not even if you're kind of new to DFS, this D'Angelo thing is not a secret anymore. The Steelers are just basically running him to death, or if they're not running him, they're throwing to him to death. So he's just dominated the Steelers' touches to almost, I mean, just a totally crazy degree. He's still the price jumps from I think 7,800 last week all the way up to 8,800 on FanDuel, and I think from 71 to 75 on DraftKings. Mm-hmm. Are we just locking and loading this in cash? Is this the exact kind of situation? Like, are we looking at RB1 sort of? There's very few of these guys we hate, just have to pay up for him in cash games at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so to give you a little frame of reference on Williams, with 68 touches so far this season, there are only 20 quarterbacks who have been in more plays than D'Angelo Williams, right? So, like, he would be the 21st most active player, quarterbacks included, and then he doesn't get a discounted rate on any of his yards the way quarterbacks do. So he gets the full point per 10 yards. Williams, I think, ought to be considered the safest player, period, in daily fantasy right now. Gets an extra boost on DraftKings thanks to the 10 receptions this season. But, yeah, it's really hard to imagine him being anything other than at least your lower standard deviation player going into week two. Now, whether the other teams know that and are kind of keying in on the run, you know, that could be a dynamic that starts to develop. But, yeah, the Steelers are prepared to let him burn out hard and bright, and I'm not going to stand in their way, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that he's the highest owned player this Sunday.
It's a joke of a price, too, right, on FanDuel. Like, yeah. He's just not, you know, even on DraftKings, he's only 7,500. I think I just kind of don't get it. I don't know. I mean, maybe they just want everyone to play him again. It's not like he was under-owned last week, but yeah, I'm all in.
To any credit to the Eagles, the Eagles have looked okay-ish on defense this year. A little hard to tell because they played
good matchups.
Right, yeah. They played the Browns with RG3 week one, and then they played the Bears with Cutler looked a total mess.
So they haven't played a quarterback yet who's been able to make it into the week three.
Right. So. I mean. I was a little surprised by the line of this game. Pittsburgh's only -3.5. I know they're going into Philadelphia.
Pennsylvania, Doug. Yeah. You know, it's a battle of the teams in Pennsylvania. You throw out the records.
And it's a low-ish over-under, so that's the only thing that maybe worries me a little bit. Sure. That Vegas is seeing something that maybe, not that we're not seeing, but the thing is, this is almost matchup independent for Williams. If he was facing, honestly, if he was facing almost like Seattle at this price, it would be close because
sure.
Just because of the crazy 36 touches last week, the crazy amount of volume he's getting, and they're just not going to – I don't see them changing. And even if they did change, the other guy that we have for wide receiver is the pivot that you can make off this offense anyway. Yeah. So
wide receiver.
Yeah. The next guy we have on the list falls into that same category of sort of volume. It's Lamar Miller. The Texans mm-hmm. have been very clear about what they're going to do. He is their workhorse. They are just going to run him until he gets hurt. I don't know why teams do this with guys that they've just signed. It doesn't seem to make total sense to me. But Miller is another guy that falls into this heavy volume category. And I'm just fine pairing those two guys together, really any chance I get.
Yeah, and unfortunately you won't get as many chances as you might like since Miller plays on Thursday this week. And
I forgot that.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Miller actually, if you're, like, this is a reason, Miller is a reason to go play the Thursday game. Normally we say we like to fade the Thursday players, but his price is $7,000 on FanDuel this week. It's patently absurd. Miller, let's see here, he's second in the NFL in carries. He's got 53 total attempts through two games. It's ahead of Matt Forte. And that's, just an absurd amount of carries to be able to secure. Just a straight-up lock-in at a $7,000 price tag. Anyone who doesn't play him probably in the Thursday slate might be lighting money on fire. So
they're going to be incentivized to play him, to run him a lot, too, because I think the Houston will have the ball more than they would have ever been. More right. than they ever would have expected to play New England if New England was even just a shell of whatever they were. They're just not the same kind of team now. It doesn't stand to reason that New England's going to be able to put together long, sustained drives at all against this Texans team. They've struggled they've struggled on defense, but mostly because they can't really keep the ball as much. And that's mostly just from injury standpoint. So you're right. You're totally right. It just slipped my mind they were playing on Thursday. That is the reason to go play. He'll be overowned because of it, but it's still probably correct, and you can definitely play him all over the place in cash.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting the guy on the other sideline in that game, LeGarrette Blount, is also one of the four running backs with 50 or more carries this season, and he's just 6,500. So if you're looking at that Thursday game, pretty reasonable just to pair Blount with Miller and just say call it a day. Pay 13.5 at the running back position and lock up two of the top four carry guys for the season. It's really rare that you can do something like that. And actually, if you're comparing those guys to Williams at 8,800, you probably get more points per dollar safety by going cheap there. So it's really a shame that they're not playing on Sunday and we can't play them in more main slates, but definitely a big draw to the Thursday games.
The other guy that we wrote up this week, and some negative news comes out about him, though. It's always funny about read this kind of news, because there was one beat reporter saying that he didn't think that Ezekiel Elliott was taking football that seriously. it's impossible to like know exactly what even that means. Completely then ridiculous. Someone compared his like yards per game in college to his yards per game in the NFL, which is like just totally just apples to oranges completely.
It's the dumbest thing I've
ever heard. Right. We love the matchup here for Elliott. He was the third guy that we wrote up. He's another sort of volume-y guy. We were a little hesitant to play him early on in the season, even though we liked sort of his baseline projections, because we just weren't sure what the Cowboys' plan was going to be. They seem content with handing him the ball upwards of 20 times a game. And is that the kind of safety we're looking for against Chicago?
I think so. I mean, Chicago seems to be a matchup that even the Cowboys could probably be in command of. And given that Elliott's, to your point, had 41 carries this season, it's good for fifth in the NFL. He's still in that upper tier. He's not in that 50-plus group, the Williams, Miller, Forte, Blunt group, but he's the leader of the pack in that group in the 40s, which is quite small. The thing I like about him, too, is he does seem to be the definitive goal line back. He's got essentially the two Cowboys touchdowns down there. Some people thought Prescott would vulture those away, but that hasn't been the case so far. So, yeah, Elliott looks solid to me. I mean, he's a little bit expensive, but this is a week to pay up at running back, it seems like, and I don't mind deploying him really in any slate where you've got him.
Theoretically, he has the game script to his advantage, too. They're -7 against a really beat-up Chicago team in Dallas on Sunday night. This is a primetime game for them, whatever that means, I'm not sure, but it's really the heavy -7 favorite that I like here with them that they, you know, we have seen in the past that being favored going in has some correlation, or at least has something to do with how a running back will fare during the course of a game, at least especially high-end games. Elliott's in line for one of those this week against a beat-up Chicago team. Off to wide receivers, you know, this has been a theme for us since the first week of the season where we basically led our picks with D'Angelo Williams at running back and Antonio Brown at wide receiver. I'm totally fine doing it. We didn't totally copy and paste the write-up from Antonio Brown from week two, though a lot of the ideas are going to be the same here. He's still Antonio Brown. I know he came off a 4-catch game against the Bengals last week. He still had 11 targets in that game. It was raining for the first at least 25% of the game, maybe more. I don't exactly remember when the driving rain stopped. The rain clearly had clearly played a part in Big Ben's accuracy early in the game. He could not drive the ball. The ball was kind of floating all over the place. That kind of bit into Brown's targets early, and then just like sort of the game just wasn't going and flowing the way it wanted to, but the targets were still there. Is he still by far the safest wide receiver option that we have?
I would say so. I mean, with Brown, there's some lack of safety built into his huge price tag. I mean, $9,500, he'll be the most expensive guy on your team because he's the most expensive option available. And he's also a guy who probably has as much positional and target security as anyone in the NFL. I mean, the 4 conversions on 11 targets is very out of character for he and Ben, so I wouldn't suspect that will continue. And I think probably the difficulties they were having connecting led to fewer targets for Brown overall. We saw Alshon Jeffrey, who's been kind of beat up in the preseason, go out with a bad quarterback and put up 100-plus yards against the Eagles last week. In a similar role, Brown is on a totally different plane than Jeffrey right now, so I suspect he'll be, you know, right up there, top 5 level wide receiver with, you know, almost no downside, which is, again, tough to say for a guy who only had 39 receiving yards last week. But, yeah, I have huge confidence in Brown going forward.
Yeah, there's a couple other target guys we can dive into as well. We try to stagger our picks based on price because we know that we simply cannot make a lineup if we were to just put all the very most expensive guys in as our picks. I mean, sometimes it necessitates having to write them up because to ignore them would be wrong. But this week, I don't know if that's the case. We have some cheaper middle tier and maybe a little bit above guys. One of those guys is Stephon Diggs. We talked a little bit about him last podcast. He's seen a lot of targets. He has a quarterback upgrade now from what was Bridgewater, never really played there. And then now it's Bradford. Or Sean Hill, then Bradford. Bradford's a pretty accurate passer. He'll be a chalky play. Is it correct to go back to the Diggs well based on his targets right now? I mean, I know we wrote him up, but I'm just wondering if maybe the hype because of how big his game was outstrips his actual value going into this one.
I don't think it does, actually. I mean, Diggs at just $6,400. You know, we always like to talk about price versus opportunity. Getting the guy with the most receiving yards in the NFL at $6,400 on FanDuel is pretty darn ridiculous. I mean, it's just not an opportunity you're going to have again for the rest of the season. And yeah, I think you can point to that game against the Green Bay as an outlier on some level, particularly the yards. And listen, he's not going to convert at the same rate as he has so far, 16 receptions on 19 targets, but Bradford's a pretty accurate passer. Diggs is not really running a lot of big, long routes. So I think that we could see a sustained performance, if not at 140 receiving yards a game, the best season of all time. I think we could see something very, very solid, and I have a hard time imagining that he's not in the neighborhood of paying this really minuscule price given the targets, the receptions, and how well it's worked out so far for them.
It's super hard to judge. It's still very difficult to judge team defense. So he faces Carolina this week. They're ranked 7th against the pass so far this season, but they've played Denver. Right. They played Denver and San Francisco. And so you're like, well, even some of this
anything adjusted, other than first is an embarrassment at that point if you're
right. You know, first is the Eagles, who have faced the Browns, right, and color. Yeah, so it's a little hard to judge these. Well, it is and it isn't, but you really just have to take some of these numbers with a grain of salt. It does not stand a reason that Carolina will stick in like that top 10 range of secondaries.
Well, they've lost both their starting cornerbacks. It's one of those things where last year's information is basically useless. This year's information is basically useless. I think we can actually look into that 7th ranking and feel disappointed at the outcome, given that they faced arguably the two worst passing defense or offenses in football. I would not be concerned at all for Diggs based on the matchup here.
I have a group of guys that are coming next. I'm not going to just go one by one, but we have a group of guys that are near the top of the chain in terms of targets this year and are having a really difficult time. They're having a difficult time for whatever reason, connecting on them. So those guys are Mike Evans, T.Y. Hilton. This is not an exact order, but it's really close. Like, this is like the top 6 or 7 in terms of targets. Is Evans, T.Y. Hilton, Jordan Matthews, and Jeremy Maclin. Mm-hmm. Those guys have seen a real nice amount of volume, and they're just all sort of in that like 10 to 11 catch range, which is well below 50% of their targets. What do you think about this group? I know we mentioned Hilton a little bit, so we don't need to go back down that road too much. So the Evans, Matthews, and Maclin group, all right in that maybe like, you know, high mid 7,000s to 8,000 range. Do any of them, is there one that just kind of jumps out to you of that group that you think falls in that tier maybe below Antonio Brown?
Yeah, sure. So I think that it's actually a lot of really, really different situations for me here. I put Evans and Hilton in the big upside, but arguably lower safety group. Both will be the clear number one targets for their quarterbacks going forward. Evans leads the league in targets, which builds in a ton of safety on his price going forward, if that's just where Winston's going to look.
A lot of that came last game against Arizona. They were playing from behind. He had something like 18 targets. So I always try to evaluate this just so we're not, so we're clear.
Yeah, we can't just average him for 12 and a half a game going forward. But the fact that he has a game like that in him is something different than, say, Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt's not going to have an 18 target game all season just because his team is incapable of providing him with one. And frankly, his running mate there, Tavon Austin, 22 targets, but just 9 catches for 63 yards. That whole situation is sort of a mess. I mean, I think Britt is more in the punt discussion than a guy you would want to plug into cash games personally, but and it's just a different thing. Like, you're saying something different by playing Britt at 5,400 or Evans at 8,000.
Sure.
Like, that's just kind of apples and oranges on some level, but I think both are worth consideration for their prices. A really interesting, I think arguably the most interesting guy here is Jordan Matthews. Matthews has always been sort of a guy that his quarterbacks have had a fondness for, especially in that sort of short possession game. And if he's going to be Wentz's go-to guy, which is how it seems like it's going to play out at this point. I mean, he had 20% of the team targets in week one, 13% in week two. So I could see Matthews just being, you know, a guy who winds up in that 7,700 to 7,800 range by the time the season ends. And given that he's 6,900 right now, I think that's a pretty clear value play. So, but I think all these guys are fine. You know, I think we still see a lot of inefficiencies at wide receiver pricing because wide receiver touchdowns are a little bit more variable. And as that begins to normalize, I think we'll see more fair pricing. So I think now's a great time to get some value.
Yeah, I think that's where we want to look too. You just want to see, yes, some of these guys will have trouble converting passes. That's just been historically difficult for them, whether it's their hands or their quarterback or a little combination of both. But you're really just, your best chances to score lots of points are to get the ball. It's a very simple concept. And
yeah, and if your team can get in the red zone.
Right, and it's just, but it's for some guys, they just do not want to get them the ball. These guys have historically shown that their teams want to get them the ball because it's either, you know, long passing routes or whatever it is, and they're going to keep doing it, and I'm willing to just keep going on the volume for as much as possible as we can going forward. Moving in, finally, you know, we'll kind of finish it off here with tight ends. We mentioned this before the podcast. This week really seems like you can get away going pretty cheap at tight end and feeling pretty good about it, to the point where I think you can even consider on DraftKings playing two tight ends because of the prices on some of these guys.
Boy.
I'm not saying, yeah, I know. I'm not saying it's something I'm 100% going to do, but there is a group of tight ends coming in the 3,000 range. And on DraftKings, if you want to pay up for any kind of safety, you do need to start looking in this. You can also spread it around a little bit more to the middle tier, but it's hard. DraftKings pricing has been very tight. It has not been easy to make lineups there since the beginning of the year. I don't think it's going to get a whole lot easier if they keep the running back piece sort of in that middle range. The guys we wrote up were Jacob Tammy and Dennis Pita, and there actually are a couple other guys beyond that that are maybe not as much in the target zone. Are we going to go cheap here, or do we... I mean, Jordan Reed actually showed up in a couple lineups that I was running the other day, too. So it's not like Jordan Reed's out of the discussion here. Where do you think we go with tight end?
I think we'll go cheap at tight end. And I think that, for me, it feels pretty clear at this point. I'm off Jordan Reed. I don't think this is a position we need to spend up. And I think if you look at Reed's pricing and then compare him to some of the other guys we're talking about in similar pricing tiers at other positions, then, for me, my mind is sort of made up. Like, Jordan Reed is more expensive than Lamar Miller, for instance. That just, to me, is out of bounds. The guy I like best, I think, is Jacob Tammy. I mean, Tammy, very, very interesting. He's had 18% of his team's targets this season, which, you know, if you're not up on tracking target percentages, and maybe why would you be, that's such a high number. I mean, for a frame of reference on his own team, Julio Jones at 12% and Mohamed Sanu at 12%. And you can get Tammy at 5,500. Now, yeah, Tammy's not a downfield guy. He's not going to have usually explosive receiving yards performances, but he's clearly a red zone target for them. Punched in a touchdown last week, averaged 15 yards a catch last week as well. So I think that he's a guy that you could really look at as a guy whose needle is going to continue to point upward. I think that price is probably 10%-ish too low right now, maybe as high as 15%. And while, yeah, the snaps aren't there in the same way that they are for Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu, most of that comes from the fact that Tammy is more of a pass-catching tight end than a blocking tight end, and when they bring him in, they just throw him the ball. The fact that he's at that same target percentage level without being out there for every single snap is really, really encouraging for me. So I'm all in on Tammy this week.
All right, give me a no have to. So you mentioned about you were off of Jordan Reed this week. So
yes.
We'll go and do a quick no halftime challenge before we leave here today.
Great.
You talk a little bit about no halftime, and I will come up with a challenge with Jordan Reed in mind.
Sure. So no halftime is an app that we are fully on board with. We're users and customers in the no halftime app. So throw that out there to start. So if you issue a challenge there, you might be up against Doug or myself. But yeah, it's a sweet app where you can play one-on-one fantasy contests against other people who have challenges in mind. So the way a challenge works is the same way it works when you're eating guacamole with some dummy at a party. He says, I love Jordan Reed this week. And you say, hey, put your money where your mouth is, man. $5 that Antonio Brown has more points than he has or whatever. And so you just issue your challenge to the world, and then maybe some dummies will accept it, maybe they won't. And
everyone's a dummy to you, I noticed.
Not everyone, just people that would accept such a bold-facedly easy challenge, right?
Gotcha.
Plenty of smart people won't accept your challenges, and they'll just scroll right past them. So yeah, you'll put your challenges out there. People will accept them, or they won't. Or you can even go passive on it. Go in there and just scroll through the challenges that are out there. Maybe it'll put guys on your radar, or maybe you'll just see some easy money that you can go pick up. So yeah, go over to nohalftime.com, download the app, use promo code DFSR25. You can get a $25 bonus, 100% of your... up to a $25 bonus on 100% of your initial deposit with promo code DFSR25. So do you have someone that you were going to challenge me with on Jordan Reed?
Yeah, so I'm going to go. So we mentioned some of these wide receivers, and you were off Jordan Reed.
I'm off Jordan Reed.
Okay, but I'll give you Jordan Reed versus Jordan Matthews.
Jordan Matthews.
Our system likes Reed better. So it's by...
Probably because you made a mistake.
I think you did the updates for the Redskins. But so our system prefers Reed in this situation than it does to Matthews. Why do you think that is?
Well, so right now our system has Reed at 8.6 targets. I don't have this front of mind right now, unfortunately. I suspect that that's on par with Jordan Matthews' targets, and I think that's probably wrong. I think Matthews is probably definitively a better targets guy going forward than Reed is. I will say that Reed has arguably better quarterback play.
We have Matthews for 10.25 targets, so,
yeah,
so significantly more.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm not exactly sure then why it's loving Reed's matchup. I assume it's probably matchup dependent then.
Could be red zone looks too.
Well, Reed converts more targets more touchdowns per target than Matthews does. So, yeah, there's a lot there. I think what I'm seeing in Washington is just too much of a timeshare to be comfortable. I mean, you have Crowder, Garcon, Jackson, and then Reed is there as well. Reed, while he was more consistent last season, has had sort of an up-and-down history in the past. So, for me, give me the consistent guy. I know Matthews is going to be there every down.
What about Reed or Greg Olsen, same position?
I'll take Greg Olsen as well. I mean, Olsen's coming off a great week. I just don't trust the pass catching situation in Washington right now. I don't think you're getting
for me. It's not even close. I would take Reed over Olsen, and I
all right, put it in the books then.
Yeah, I'll take Olsen. Close.
All right, way to throw out a different challenge that was better for me, and then ignore it, and then move on. That was really cool, dude.
What was your challenge?
Matthews versus Jordan Reed.
Oh,
so the one more thing before we go, just because he'll be a huge play, and I'm not sure if it's correct or not, is Jesse James. Jesse James is still a minimum price guy on FanDuel. He was a chalk play last week and went out paying his price easily thanks to a touchdown reception. I can't fault anyone for playing him again this week. I think he's a totally fine play. The risk that you're taking on there is that the targets aren't there, not anywhere compared to some of the other guys we've recommended. Dennis Pitta is another one. I don't know if we jumped in on him yet or not, but both Pitta and Tammy and Reed, frankly, are all such safer targets bets that if you're playing Jesse James, you're basically saying that you think he's going to go out there and replicate the touchdown performance. I'm not confident that he will, so I'm not personally in on that. Although, you know, again, I might wind up playing him just because the price is so great, and you might just want to punt the position away, but I'm not going to be dying to or anything.
All things, our system is pretty much showing to go cheaper at tight end, and you're totally fine. There are guys that you can grab in there, and you can feel pretty good about it. Jesse James, one of those guys, but I'm firmly in the Tammy Pitta camp going forward. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. If you like typing in less letters, head over to the site. You can check out the main picks article that we talked about today. You can also grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, and also gives you access to our state-of-the-art player lab that allows you to filter for really just about any different a piece of information you thought was important.
Yeah, for any kind of contest that you're playing.
Right,
yeah.
Vegas over-unders, target percentage. You know, we mentioned target percentage. We do a lot of trends on there. Defense versus the specific position the guy's playing. So really everything you need to get your hands on and to put out together lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. We will be back Friday discussing and breaking down every single game on the NFL slate. And we will talk to you then.
Yeah, man. See you.